Welcome to Commas.
Commas is all things tech.
The culture and technology coming together.
Life hacks.
The practicality right now in the inefficiency of the internet of buying and selling stuff is extraordinary.
Entrepreneurship advice.
I think the first thing is you got to understand your business inside out.
Love and tech.
We've almost reduced dating to kind of this very momentary snap of a person.
It's gonna be a fire show.
I have yet to see something these days that's truly differentiated.
New advice and new inspiration every show.
This really is about the next generation of creators going faster, further than we did.
And now, Sequoia Blodgett.
Now let's start stacking them commas.
On this episode, we'll hear from two individuals who were incarcerated who both turned their entrepreneurial skills from a negative into life-changing positives. And we'll catch up with a special guest about his experience dealing with dating apps.
Entrepreneurship advice. Learn from the hottest and most successful investors, founders, and innovators in the game.
Determine your greatness.
It's time to get your knowledge up.
Okay, for sure, for sure.
We've got special guest Marcus Bullock on the line, an ex-felon turned entrepreneur who was sentenced to 8 years in prison at the age of 15. Wow. Welcome to Commas, Marcus. How's it going?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm good. Thank you so much.
So tell me a little bit more about your background. I know we kind of just grazed over exactly, you know, what happened with you and your upbringing, but tell me a little bit more about that and how you got tied up in the system.
Yeah, where we jump straight in to, you know, to me going in prison. So
you're like something happened before I was in prison. Let's talk about that. Okay.
I had a short run. But I had a, you know, a little joke. Yeah, no, I mean, I went to prison when I was 15. That's my truth. You know, up until those, you know, during those years, you know, I grew up in the Washington D.C. area. Born and raised in D.C. Moved to Prince George's County, Maryland, which is like right outside of D.C. And I started going to Sula High School, built some friends, played some basketball. But yeah, I mean, I lived in neighborhoods where it was normal for you to aspire to be like the dude driving the Benz, but maybe sold a little bit of, you know, stuff on the side. And I aspired to be like him versus being like my federal employee mom who went to work every day and drove an Escort.
Wow. So what exactly happened? Like, how did you, what was that process? How did you get incarcerated? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, so a friend of mine and I, we ended up stealing a car from a man at the mall. It was about a week after my 15th birthday. We stole a car from him. We got away. We made it home that night. The next morning, we ended up going shopping with that man's stolen credit cards, like the brilliant geniuses, you know, teenage kids that we were. And then next thing I knew, I was standing in front of a judge listening to him sentence me to 8 years in adult maximum security prison for stealing that man's car. And my mind was blown. Whirlwind started happening. Complete disbelief. My family standing just a few feet behind me screaming uncontrollably in the courtroom. My basketball team, my church family. I mean, it was crazy. But, you know, it's a week after my 15th birthday, and I can't even understand the magnitude of what's really happening to me. I mean, everything that was consuming my head was centered around, like, homecoming and, like, my girlfriend and buying her, you know, what kind of sneakers I'm going to buy her for Christmas. And, you know what I mean? Like, that was my world. So a prison sentence, yeah, just wasn't on my radar. Knocked me right in the face.
Wow. So why were you tried as an adult when you were 15 years old?
You know, it was during that era of the super predators. I mean, yeah, Hillary Clinton getting on TV saying, hey, these children are, you know, coming to our neighborhoods and terrorizing. And they wanted to make an example out of my friend and I. I was 15. He was 16. We crossed the bridge from D.C. over to Maryland, from Maryland over to Virginia. And they were like, nah, no, you're not going to do this. And they smacked us both in the head. They gave us 23 years to life, and they suspended 15 of those years and told me I'm going to have to serve 8 of them. And I not only had to serve 8 of them, but had to serve them in adult maximums because we were served such a heinous crime.
So tell me about adult maximum, because I've obviously never been imprisoned. So,
yeah,
so I don't know what that actually means. So tell me about what that means.
So I got sentenced to serve my time inside of facilities that were typically reserved for people that were serving, you know, time with the most, you know, violent crimes or had a ton of time. So if they had, you know, majority of the people that was on the rec yard with me had 50, 60, 70 years. You know, most of them had, you know, of course, most of us had either murder, robbery, carjacking, you know, a malicious wounding, assault. You know, it was like those kinds of crimes that were typically housed on those kinds of penitentiaries. And they sent me there because I was classified as, you know, somebody who had to serve the time at maximum security.
Wow. So at what point did you decide while you were in there that entrepreneurship was something that you got interested in? Were you studying it? Was it something that like piqued your interest before, after? Like when did that come to fruition for you?
You know, it's the interesting thing. Like I was always an entrepreneur. Like I was a kid who sold blow pops and now.
Right. Okay. So let me, I'm going to jump in there because everybody's like, so when did entrepreneurship become a thing? No, actually, it was a thing my entire life, right?
Yeah, no question. Like, I didn't know anything else but that. Like, I lost sleep, you know what I mean? Like, counting how many cherry, watermelon, apple blow pops I had and, like, which ones I was going to sell through the fastest, how I was going to go back to the store. And then I was going to, you know, because the yellow annihilators will always be the ones that sold last. I would sell them in, like, bundles to get rid of them. Like, my brain was already starting to think about how I can make money from, like, the very early stages of my life.
That's crazy. And I think that's so interesting. So when did you decide? So let's talk about, first of all, your time in behind bars. Like, what was that like? And then once you were released, when did you decide to start Flick Shop?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of the hardest times of my life, as you can imagine. It was very dark and, you know, prison is a naturally inherently just a violent place in general. And so, I walked into the gate thinking like, all right, look, Marcus, you in the big boys now, you're in the big leagues. Walk straight into it like, you know, where's the beef? I want to run straight to it. Let's go ahead and get in our first couple fights. Let's get them out the way. Like, that's how I walked into it. And so eventually my mom, she saw me change into this different person. I've become, you know, like this very dark human. And she was, you know, she made a commitment. She said, Marcus, you will not die in prison. I will not allow you to die in prison. And so she would come and visit me and accept these really expensive collect calls. And she, you know, there's no internet in prison. So my mom would write me letters and send me pictures every single day from after like 2 years all the way to the end of the 8 years. And then remember, I went to prison at 15. So, you know, my 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th birthday, 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd, all spent in prison.
Wow, and so those are your milestones.
Yeah, like it was crazy. Like all of the major, you know what I mean? Like the 18s, the 21s, I grew up all inside of those, you know, I celebrated them with some of my best friends in there. And so when I came home, you know, my boys, they were enjoying the new life that I had, even like the search of trying to get a job. Like I talked to them about the difficulty of me applying for job after job after job, because now I'm 23 years old. I've served almost a decade in prison and I can't even tell you where I've been. My last grade completed was the ninth grade. Like I don't have a lot to offer when I go into these interviews. Not only that, but I got to check that box, you know, back then before banning the box that said that I was a convicted felon. So I walked into the door like, oh man, I know I got a couple of strikes, but please give me a shot. Let me have a job. Mm-hmm. And I told my boys all about the journey.
Wow. So then when did Flick Shop become a thing? When did you decide, okay, listen, obviously getting back into the system or getting back into the real world is an issue. So what do I do now?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing was the Flick Shop wasn't even the first thing. I actually started my career working when I finally did land a job. It was at a paint store while I was making minimum wage. I was like the guy who was mixing blue paint for the customers, right? Mm-hmm. And they would come in and they would ask me, hey Marcus, how much do you charge to paint my kitchen? And I'm like, well, you know, Corey, we don't paint your kitchen, we sell you the paint so you paint your own kitchen. And then the contractors will come in right behind and be like, man, yeah, you know, the real estate boom is starting to burst, there's no work out here and stuff. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it's people that come here every day asking us to paint for them. And so a light bulb went off, and I became the conduit between the Squeeze of the world and the Painters of the world. And eventually we started Perspectives Painting Contractors, and it was this, it became this thing where we were brokering projects, and I grew this small painting business from a, you know, a kitchen painting business all the way to a full construction firm where we were painting airports and, you know, Georgetown University and National Press Club. And that became my thing. That was like my first big foray into the business community.
Wow. So then what transitioned you from that to then taking on Flickshock? Was it because you were already kind of familiar with that environment, knew that there was a problem that needed solving? What made that transition happen?
Yeah, I wish I could say I was that brilliant. It was really because... Yeah, my boys kept hitting me like, yo, dude, you in the Bahamas. You know what I mean? Like, yo, you taking vacations. You got a girl. You know, you got girlfriends. You, man, you about to get married. Like, come on, man. Like, you remember your mom taking pictures and sending you, writing you letters? Like, dude, you know, send me pictures. And I'm like, yeah, no doubt. I'm gonna hit, as soon as I get home, I'm going to write you. You know, as soon as I get home, I'm going to print these pictures on my phone. I'm going to, you know, get the envelope. I'm going to go to the post office tomorrow morning, go back to the stamp. None of that ever happened. One day turned into three days turned into 6 months. Next thing I know, I'm ducking and dodging, collect calls like they bill collectors. And I'm like, y'all feel so bad, so guilty. I'm like, it has to be an app out there. I mean, it's an app to help me get my coffee quicker. It has to be an app out there to help me connect to my family that's locked up. And when I couldn't find one, that's when we took the revenue that we were able to generate from out of that construction business and build Flickshop.
So that's interesting. So it was a problem that you saw, right? The problem was you couldn't get yourself to the USPS, the actual mailbox to mail it. So you decided that you were going to create it as an app. So tell us a little bit about Flickshop and what exactly it does.
So we built the app that allows our users to take a picture, add some quick text, press send, and for 99 cents, we take that picture and text, print it on a real tangible postcard, and mail it to any person with any address anywhere in the country. And so we started with people that were incarcerated first, one, because I'm just super passionate about ensuring that we create stronger connections while people are in prison, because I believe that that's going to be the biggest contributor to successful reentry when they come home. But then we also wanted to figure out who else are we trying to connect that doesn't have any access to the internet? Or when is it like cool to be able to send your aunt in Nevada a picture of you in a studio and then not be on Facebook, right? Like when you, and they want to be shipped on a postcard. And we wanted to do it with a quick and fun and very easy to use app. And so now after connecting over 140,000 families, we're super excited to think about what the future of Flickshop is going to be for us.
That's awesome. What is the future of Flickshop going to be?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I'm paying a lot of attention to is our Flickshop School of Business. We started to grow this new education platform that we're taking back into some of these prisons, some of the same ones where I was housed, and we're teaching about entrepreneurship using a curriculum that I designed based off of my life from prison to entrepreneurship. It's a 3-week class that also prerequisites our students to be able to come into a 4-month coding and mobile app development class that's in the community. And that's dope for us, because what we're learning is that people in the community could care less about your felony if you know how to write code. You know how to solve a major problem with tech. No one cares that you have a felony. And because of the huge problem of not knowing where to go and what to do as a career option when you come home from prison outside of the service industry, we knew we had to create something, because I found success there. How can I create a legion of marketers all around the country?
That's dope. How did you get involved with John Legend in the program Free America?
Yeah, now, you know what? It was interesting because a friend of a friend of a friend, you know, met John, and they were talking about Flickshop, and he was a huge, huge fan of the app already. And then he's like, you know, I want to set up a call with Marcus. And, you know, we set up the call with the teams, and I'm like, yo, you got to be kidding me. John Legend is using the app. Like, this is dope. You know what I mean? And next thing we knew, after conversations around his desire to insert himself more inside of the justice reform spaces, we learned that he didn't just want to like be an advocate. Like, he wanted to figure out how to build real solutions and weave in entrepreneurs like myself, because he was like, hey, look, how how then thoughtful about the people that are coming home from prisons and how can I contribute there? He believed in entrepreneurship. He brought me in, you know, to introduce this idea that he had. And then we found seven other entrepreneurs. We banded together. Unlocked Futures was created with Free America. And now, you know, the rest is history.
So do you think for a lot of inmates, I mean, I would say entrepreneurship is the way out? Like, I mean, like you said, when you came out, you couldn't find a position, you couldn't find a job because of your record, right? So is that a solution for a lot of inmates, do you think?
Oh, I mean, I think I'm big on this trying to change the whole language around inmates. So I want to use the term people in prison versus the term inmate. But like the folks that are there, like I think so. I think it's going to be a huge solution for a lot of their reentry programs. But the reality of it is that one, it really is challenging to, you know, find the companies that are willing to hire people that are coming home from prison. Like that's already a challenge. But even if you get to the point where these new legislations that are pushing closer to war, knocking down some of these barriers like ban the box, you know, you're delayed in this new response, even at the interview, then the interviewer saying, hey, we, you know, thanks for making it this far in the interview, but we see that we did a background check and see this. Can you explain it? You have to ask those questions. It beats the morale up. You don't feel like you can accomplish the stigma that's attached to, you know, returning citizens. Like, it's already there. You know that's that monkey on your back. I feel like if we can figure out ways to be able to teach these men and women, who are, majority of them are natural entrepreneurs anyway, how to formalize their plans and go out and leverage tech to be able to build a real sustainable life for themselves, I think that we're on to something. It's worth a shot.
You're like, that is phase two.
Yeah, I mean, just like, yo, nothing's working right now. You know what I mean? Like, we have this big expectation for people to come home from prison and to be successful. And, like, with what tools? You know what I mean? Like, even the dudes who I want to hire when I was, like, adamantly trying to find talent to work at our construction business, a lot of the talent that we wanted to hire, the men and women just weren't employable. It wasn't that the opportunity wasn't there, and the desire was, you know, was there as well on their side. But they weren't really employable because we have these, you know, we have these programs in prison right now that aren't like, they aren't designed to be successful. You come home to D.C. or New York or L.A., like, if you was in prison, you were learning how to build chairs or print license plates or build wall petitions. Mm. There's no jobs when you come home to New York City with building chairs. You know what I mean? Like, where you going to work with that skill? You know, so you aren't even employable, even if they give you a shot. So we want to figure out ways to be able to leverage tech and bring that back into these prisons, and now we can create a stronger pathway to reentry, and we can be seriously intentional about ending mass incarceration.
So dope. So any advice for, I won't say inmates, formerly incarcerated individuals on how they can change, see, I learned quick, how they can change the direction, their direction when they're coming back out of the system and now back into the real world?
So this, you know, what I tell people, you know, when they first come home, how can you change, like, surround you? One of the things that I've learned, and I like to use my own story versus like giving advice. Like, let me tell you what worked for me. One of the things I learned along my journey, it was the importance, the value of mentorship. It's like that. It was a term that I heard when I was younger, but no one really took the time to say, hey, Marcus, you really need to find a mentor or a set of mentors. And at each stage of your life, what that did for me, when I learned the value of mentors, it allowed me to learn how to articulate myself a certain way at a certain kind of meeting versus going into the meeting knowing that I know what I'm talking about. It allowed me to, when I started the journey of fundraising, it allowed me to learn how to target people who funded products like ours and not walking into a solar farm. You know, venture capital firm, and, you know, I mean, a venture capital firm is focused on investing in solar farms and pitching them on our business, right? Like, talking to those mentors allowed me to learn from them and the mistakes that they made, the hurdles they jumped over, and it accelerated my growth a lot faster. Dudes are coming home from prison, women are coming home from prison, find the people that really want to help you. There's a boatload of people that want to be the mentors. We got to find them, connect to them, and learn and feed from them. That's like my biggest thing. Like, surround just birds of a feather flock together.
That's real. Well, thank you so much, Marcus, for sharing your story. If somebody wants to know more about Flick Shop, are you, where should they go?
Yet, you know, find us on all social channels, FlikShop. We're all at FlikShop. Download the app, Flick, you know, it's in your app stores. We give it away for free. Your first FlikShop postcard is for free. So if you have a loved one that's incarcerated, I know you probably haven't written them in a while. This is your shot to be able to send them that picture of whatever you just posted on Instagram yesterday with that same caption, and just send it. They want to hear from you. Use it. So that's our thing. We want to keep families connected. This is the way we're doing it.
This is The Plug.
You know who's The Plug.
It's time to get caught up on the hottest in tech.
Keep it locked, you heard.
With Sequoia Blodgett.
I see you, little mama.
All right, so I know you guys have been streaming a lot of content, but I have the plug for you. There is this bum show that's coming to Showtime. It's an original comedy series called Black Monday from executive producers Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. It's 1968 Wall Street. Bad fashion, big hair, and even bigger egos. The old boys club has all the power until an unruly group of underdog traders decides it's their turn to be on top and accidentally causes the biggest stock market crash in history. It's starring Don Cheadle, Andrew Reynolds, and Regina Hall. Black Monday premieres Sunday, January 20th at 10 p.m. only on Showtime. But here's the plug, you guys. You can try a free month of Showtime by going to Showtime.com and entering the code LIP. This offer is for first-time subscribers only and expires February 24th. So get on it. You guys just heard from Marcus, which was beyond powerful. And in keeping with the theme of giving those who are formerly incarcerated a voice in the world of tech, next I want to invite my homie, entrepreneur, recording artist, advocate, and founder of the Black Group, Divine, to the show. What's good, Divine?
What's good?
So many things to talk about.
Yeah.
So let's start from the beginning. What was it like for you growing up?
Well, yeah, and initially, you know, I grew up middle class. I was born and raised in my youth in Newport, Rhode Island. Mother was middle class, always worked. You know what I mean? That was kind of like the foundation we had. I knew who my father was, but him and my mother weren't really together. And he was in and out the house once in a while. And there really was no foundation with my pops. But nevertheless, my mom raised me very well, you know, with great mannerisms and all that. And I lived that type of life. Like, you know, once you lose it, you know, you the type of life you want back. And unfortunately, she got addicted to crack cocaine during the early 80s crack epidemic. And that kind of like abruptly thrust us into the projects. And that whole lifestyle began as far as me being, you know, caught up in criminality and all that.
How did that happen? And what got you incarcerated?
Well, there was something between my mother and my father, you know. They were supposed to have gotten married. My father was already married, things like that, and infidelity, things of that nature, and just being unfaithful. And just my mother wasn't, you know, she just broke it down mentally, emotionally. She had that breakdown. And one day I came home from a Catholic school, and everything in the house was being sold like at a house sale. Like everything is being sold. And she went with this unscrupulous type of dude and moved down to Louisiana, Leesville, Louisiana. And that kind of thrust us, me and my younger brother, into the projects. Kind of seeing that whole dynamic. And eventually, fast forward, we had actually went down to Louisiana with her for a while, for about a year, came back, and that's when the crack epidemic was just full-blown. She got caught up into that, and that kind of, like, thrust me in a position, like, how do I survive? How do I provide food, clothing, and shelter? Because, you know, the rent was never paid, no food in the refrigerator. Like, that was a real experience I was going through. So I saw what everybody else was doing to make money, and I kind of gravitated towards that. And that's how I started hustling at about 13 years old. I became very, very good at it. I think that's due to my DNA intelligence. My father was an entrepreneurial mind, you know what I'm saying? And what I would learn about him, what I knew about him. He was entrepreneurial, always worked his own thing, roofing and painting. So I kind of picked up those things like naturally. And then as I started entering the streets, I just started maneuvering through the streets at a high level at a very young age. And even for the place that I was at, being Newport, Rhode Island, with the crack epidemic, you know?
Wow. So you were going through this whole thing.
Yeah. And I was just going through it with her in the sense of just loving her and not wanting to give up on her. And I think that's really what led me to the streets and to want to be high level, because I was like, yo, I need a lot of money. because I want to take us all out of this predicament. Me, my younger brother, my family, my mother, get her off drugs. And ironically, I was using drugs to do that as a way to get that money, you know?
How long were you incarcerated?
A total of a decade. Yeah, 10 years incarcerated, a total. First time I went away for a major drug charge was for 7 years. I got 7 years sentenced under a draconian crack law. So I was I was one of the first dudes in Rhode Island to be hit with the crack law. The very first dude to be hit with the crack law in Newport, Rhode Island. But I would travel to Philadelphia in my young age. That's where I would like procure my drugs from. And then I would hit New York City. But then I would bring it back up top to New England because it was much more, I get more money for it, you know, it was much more expensive. So that's kind of how I did. I sourced it from there, and I was getting high quality, dealing with high level individuals, and I was getting large amounts of it. So I was doing like about 2 kilos a month.
Wow. So when you got out, what was that transition like having been incarcerated for over 10 years? Like what was
Yeah. I mean, just dealing with recidivism, just living a criminal lifestyle. Like I dedicated my life to that at a very young age. So it became like, you know, it was my part of my subconscious. It's just what I did and how I moved through the streets. And that was how I provided, you know, food, clothing, and shelter for me and my younger brother all my life. And that's what I always done. So to break out of that and to come out of that is hard. Even though you don't want to do something, you still engage in it, right? Even though my heart was somewhere else, my mom was caught up in the street life and living that criminal lifestyle and that criminal culture because I had done it since I was about 13 years old. So it was hard to break out of that. And then coming from making all kinds of money that I was making, hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, in weeks and in months, going to that to work a 9 to 5, making, you know, minimum wage, it was just crazy. Even if I could even get a job from the door, you know.
So how did you get involved in tech? Like what was that transition like? How did you find out about it? What made you say, okay, this could be an opportunity for me?
Yeah, I was incarcerated. I was 100% dissatisfied last time I was incarcerated, about 6 years ago now. And I was like, yo, I put a determined idea in my mind, like, yo, I got to change. I got to break this. Because I knew I was too intelligent to be incarcerated. I knew I wasn't too intelligent to keep engaging in criminal activity at this age and at this stage of life. And I always felt I had a greater purpose. And I always believed in myself at that type of level. I just didn't know how to get to that point, right? I was able to do that in a drug game. But that had a ceiling, right? It was at the time where I'm like, yo, I've been incarcerated too long, dealing with recidivism in and out of prison, doing all these years, and I really got nothing to really show for it. So I was determined to change my life. I was like, you know what? I want to become an entrepreneur. I like the process of making money.
And, I mean, you
and I want to get into it. You know what I mean?
We're an entrepreneur.
Right. Well, you know, formally one, right. A legitimate entrepreneur. You know what I mean?
But that is conceptually the same.
Yeah. You know no, what I mean? No, definitely. There's a lot of similarities, right? A lot of parallels. And it connects definitely, and I realized that later when I got the formal education of entrepreneurship and startup building. So I read about venture capitalist Ben Horowitz. You know, that's my guy. Read about him and how he loved hip hop, and I kind of connected with that. I'm like, yo, what if I? And I actually thought to myself in the cell, I was like, yo, what if I get this individual to, you know, to believe in and support me? That could change my life forever. So I kind of went down that pathway. When I came home, eventually reached out to him. After seeing him on TV 2 years after I was out, and I decided to reach out to him on Twitter and just took that step and was like, yo, I read about you. You know, I'm a rap recording artist all my life. I sold drugs. I want to dead this lifestyle. Like, you mentor me.
Wow.
You know? And things manifested, man.
Was that straight ask? Because, I mean, for you guys who don't know who Ben Horowitz is, it's one of the biggest funds. And Andreessen Horowitz is literally one of the biggest funds in Silicon Valley. So was that just a consistent, like, ping, ping, ping? Or was it like, hey, Ben, what's good? And then he answered.
Yeah. He saw the connection. He saw the hip-hop connection immediately. I told him, you know, I read about him and I told my story. And I just kind of, like, appealed to his philanthropic side, if you would, to be like, you know, when people are philanthropic, which I learned that he was, I know they have empathy. If they don't have empathy, they at least got sympathy for people's plights, right? So I read his blog and I saw how, you know, he was the proceeds from his book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things. He was donating those proceeds to a charity of his, trying to help women in the struggle in Africa and overseas and all that. So I was like, yo, there's a connection here. And I felt his energy, and just from the way he wrote his blog, I felt a lot of energy from him. And I connected to that. So I just appealed to that. You know what I'm saying? I appealed to that, like, yo, listen, this is what it is. And I didn't come asking for money, right? My initial thought was like, yo, get him or ask him to invest in your music endeavors. And at that point, I really had the opportunity. I'm like, yo, nah, that's not what it is. It's bigger than that. Music is only one aspect of what I do. I just believe that I had greater skill sets or greater skill set or greater skills. Within that skill set, yeah, I didn't even identify them at that point, but I just knew I had them and I didn't know what they were. And as I started coming through the process of coming into Silicon Valley and the tech, experience drew all of them things out of me for me to start learning about, okay, skill set and the skills that it takes to build startups and be an entrepreneur. And I started identifying all these things that I had in me that I never even knew what to call them, right? I just had them and right. never even used them.
Right.
Yeah, they all came out when I had that opportunity.
So then how did you build that relationship with Ben over time? Because I know at this point you guys are super close, but what was that like going from hitting him on Twitter to now?
Yeah, it was like Ben's the type of guy, like he's authentic. Like a lot of people think on the outside don't really know how deep Ben is with connected to Black culture. Besides him being married to a Black woman, you know what I'm saying? And big up Felicia Horwitz, by the way. You know what I'm saying? Straight out of Compton.
Right,
you know what I mean? Literally straight out of Compton. But people don't, they just look at him having an African-American wife, him listening to hip-hop music, but they don't really know the depth of his connection to Black people, to Black culture, to Black struggle. And it's very, very intimate. And a lot of people don't realize that. And I didn't realize the depth of that until I started coming around him and seeing, like, his friends, his family, how he engaged. So Ben's just an authentic dude. If he feels something, he feels it. If he doesn't, he doesn't. You know what I mean? And the needle can move from he feels it to where he doesn't feel it. And that comes from individuals. That comes from people around him. You know, because I've seen a lot of people come around and not necessarily all of them are still coming around. But Ben's, he gives people an opportunity. I wouldn't say he's high selective. He's selective, but not in a sense of where he won't give somebody at least hair him out if the opportunity presents itself. Right? Some things he don't reach for much. Like Ben's not going to just reach for certain things. But being who he is, he gets inundated with a lot of different things, a lot of different people, a lot of different requests and asks. And, you know, he can't fulfill everything and engage with everybody, but those that he chooses to engage with, it's real. It's real and it's authentic. So building that relationship with him was just more so just me being authentic and being real with who I am and you know, what I wanted to do. And a lot of people say, you know, it's crazy. You asked Ben to mentor. You just had to ask. You reached out to him. That's crazy. I'm like, nah, that's not crazy. That's just me being real of what I want and what I wanted. I've read about him. I connected with him. I'm like, yo, if I can connect with this man and get him and have him mentor me, get him to mentor me, then that'd be next level for me. And I really want to change my life. That's all it was about, me just having an opportunity to change my life. And that was what was presented to me. And so I took that pathway.
So do you recommend, I mean, obviously you did that. Do you recommend people who are even in that kind of similar situation to go find a mentor?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think mentorship is one of the most powerful, probably unrealized strengths. Being an entrepreneur, just being an individual, just trying to elevate and level up and skill up. Mentorship can go a long way. If you have mentors like Ben, people at, you know, high stature and high level, especially in these industries where they're, you know, they're the voice of these industries or they're the go-to guys in these industries, it just catapults you to that next level in such a fast, rapid way. But with Ben, his mentorship was everything. I think, you know, I owe Ben a lot. That's why I always, no matter what, I always go back and say, you know, it's Ben and Felicia. Like I always say, Ben opened the door, Felicia ushered me in, right? Because it was a team effort between the both of them that got me to develop myself to where I'm at now. They gave me opportunity. And I used to always tell Felicia all the time, you know, Felicia, thank you so much for, you know, this opportunity and the things you do for me. You're genuine and you're very helpful. And she would always say, Devon, you're doing the heavy lifting. So it's all about, you know, not only the mentor doing their part, but you doing your part as well. So I just doubled down on that. Every opportunity I had, I'm trying to double down and show and prove I'm worthy of that blessing. You know what I mean? And that's what I think helped cement the relationship and build the relationship to the level that it's at now. You know what I mean? Where, you know, they're like family.
That's dope. Tell us about Black Group.
Yeah, Black Group, yeah. So Black is an acronym that stands for Building Leverage Acquiring Knowledge. And for me, that was a process that I always used throughout my life to get to that next level. In the streets, I applied it. in prison, I applied it. And in real life, I'm applying it in the sense of being an entrepreneur and building a startup. So Black was this idea of mine to solve my own personal pain point and then bring that to my people, which was, you know, how do you become financially and economically empowered when you come from a background that's impoverished? You come from a background where you're a former drug dealer, you're formerly incarcerated. And like my man Shaka, my brother Shaka says, system impacted. It's more, you know, it's a much cleaner word. You know what I mean? It gives you a little bit more shine to it.
I love it.
System impacted, you know? So how do you come from that and be able to elevate? So my whole thing was build and leverage acquiring knowledge. Take that, create a product around it that has a social impact piece to it, because that's really big for me. I didn't want to create anything that didn't have a social impact component. So that's why I started with the financial literacy, entrepreneurship education. And I was inspired by the principles of Black Wall Street, right? The principle of cohesion, collaborative effort, cooperative economics. And what they were able to do back then, and you look at what we're doing now, the way we move, it's not like we should be ashamed of, you know, of what we're doing now for our ancestors to be able to do what they did with much less and elevate the way they did. So I took that whole premise and concept and I applied it modern day, and I was building the Black card, a prepaid debit card. Since then, though, I iterated on that multiple times. As you know, as an entrepreneur, you have to the proverbial pivot, you know, and the course correction. You know what I mean? So, you know, I did my course correction and did the pivot, and now I'm really, really, really happy about where Black is and where I'm about to take it. I can't talk too deep about it, but Black is back, definitely. You know what I mean? For 2019. And I'm excited about what's in store. You know, we reached out to some people and potentially co-founding and some funding. So trying to close those deals, get them done soon and rebuild Black.
Super dope. So how does one find out more about Black or you?
I mean, find out about me. I'm on social media, you know what I'm saying? Heavy on my social media. Divine fourth letter, D-I-V-I-N-E, the number four, T-H letter. Instagram, it's Facebook, Twitter. As far as Black right now, like I said, we in stealth right now, kind of going underground for a second. You know, I've been on hiatus for a second, and I put it on hold for a minute so I could really focus on really, really, like, really fine-tuning the value prop, you know what I'm saying, value proposition, and really fine-tuning the offering and really, like, iterating on it in a way that I know I could really build it. Because, you know, like you mentioned earlier, I have a formal eighth-grade formal education, right? That's all I have. Everything beyond that, I'm self-taught. So it's been a lot of me going through the learning curve, the ups and downs, building a team, rising to the top, dropping to the bottom. You know what I'm saying? You know the struggle yourself. You're an entrepreneur. You know what it is.
It's not all
glitz and glamour. But, you know, we do it for the gram, though. You know how we do. You know, we got to do it for the gram. But,
or the check. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, anyway, that's where it's at. And right now, like I said, it's in stealth mode. But you'll be hearing some things soon popping up.
It's life hacks.
Life hacking, baby.
Tech tips and tools for everyday needs.
Tap in.
Control, copy these shortcuts and simplify your life.
You heard us.
All right, all you solo entrepreneurs, I have got the life hack for you. So you've heard of accountability partners, right? But have you heard of business accountability partners? So here's the thing. When you're a solo entrepreneur and you're just starting out, you are responsible for everything. You are literally doing social media marketing. You're doing digital marketing. You're doing customer service. You are ad ops. You're biz dev. You're sales. You're every single position, right? So it's really easy to get super overwhelmed when you're in the process. But on top of that, it's really easy not to stay focused because you have so many things going on. So when you have an accountability partner, literally that person's there to make sure that you are checking off the boxes, right? So they're there to make sure that you're one on step to on par where you're supposed to be in terms of your goals and making sure that you're keeping track. They're there in essence to make sure that they are someone that you can bounce ideas off of, because essentially when you're by yourself and you're creating a company, you're just building and you don't have anybody to kind of reference and you don't have anybody to kind of look at it and say, that might not be the direction you want to go in,
or just to give you feedback and not necessarily judge what you're doing, but kind of to give you feedback and say, okay, maybe try this way, or maybe do this way. And the cool thing is, this person isn't necessarily a co-founder, so they don't have any equity percentage in the company, but they have an equity percentage in you, right? So they're sweat equity, and they're investing their time and their energy to make sure that you accomplish all of your goals. When you're looking for an accountability partner, what you really want to do is make sure maybe that that person is working on a company as well, and it's not necessarily a one-sided relationship, because the last thing somebody wants to do is be accountable to you and they're not getting anything in return for it. So make sure that maybe they're working on a business themselves. Maybe they had a business in the past and they're working on another business. You don't want to mix it up with a mentorship position, because essentially then that person is kind of like overseeing what you're doing. Essentially, you guys want to be valuable to each other. So set a time every single week that you guys meet. You have a conversation about what you got done the previous week, maybe some feedback on the goals that you guys set, and then set a new set of goals and continue to do that throughout the entire week's process. And in some cases, people set their goals and then they'll work on whatever they need to work on for the hour that they're with their partner, and then they'll go about doing something else. So for me, what I've found super effective is what we do is I'll have my accountability partner set her goals, I'll set my goals, and then essentially we'll work on whatever that is during the week. Then we'll come back to each other, we'll have a conversation, and we'll say, okay, this is what we got done, this is what worked, this is what didn't work, and we'll give each other feedback. So the cool thing about that is we're actually testing our own content, and we're testing our own products and our own services, so we're both getting feedback, and it's two sets of feedback. It's not necessarily just one, so you're actually moving twice as fast as you would be moving by yourself. So that's really, really cool. So definitely consider that if you're a solo entrepreneur, instead of having an actual co-founder, an accountability partner can be a great replacement.
Yo, 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 yo.
Love, life, and tech.
With Sequoia Blodgett.
Just part of our culture.
Because balance is real between the swipe culture, mental health, personal growth, career, and just about everything in between.
Just keeping it real.
It's a lifestyle.
Incredible vibes, incredible people.
Love, life, and tech.
Hey, what's up, you guys? We are delving into love, life, and tech, and we've got a special guest in the building who's been using some of the dating apps that we've discussed on the show. We talked about the league prior, and he had heard about it on a conversation that we were having, and so I decided to bring him in the building. So he's taken the plunge into the app dating world, and he's going to give us a little feedback. How are you doing?
I am good. First and foremost, to protect the innocent, I will remain anonymous.
To protect the innocent. What happened?
Just to protect the innocent. You know, we're talking about people who are not included in this conversation, who I have possibly engaged with in using these dating apps. And I just don't want them to hear this super popular, most listened to tech show and be like, hey, man, I didn't ask you to put me on blast.
That's real. That's real. Okay. So let's just talk about the league in general at first, because a lot of people don't or may not have ever opened the app and don't know what that process is like. So what was that process like for you when you opened the app, signed up? What did you go through?
Now, what's interesting for me is I think because of hearing about it on Commas, I was maybe a little more familiar and possibly prepared than your average user. So I knew that there was a vetting process. And to me, when you say the word vetting process, I expect that this is going to be something that's going to take some time versus other dating apps where it's just sign up if you want extra coins or dating tips or whatever you can pay. I knew that this one was going to be serious, especially because it's connected to your LinkedIn account. My LinkedIn account is pretty serious, and I don't know anyone else, but everyone that I use, they don't want to be put on blast. I figured the league making me sign up through my LinkedIn account and connecting, and it got all my job history and all of that on top of, you know, getting a really concise, but I feel full and fleshed out description of who I am, just to hurry up and get to the point, filled all that out. And I was like, okay, cool. And it said, congratulations. You are now on the waiting list. We will contact you when we feel you are possibly even ready to reach out to somebody in the league. And I was like,
I love it.
You guys were not kidding at all. It was everything that you said it was. And I waited. And I thought to myself, I'm going to be waiting forever. Not that I'm like, you know, some undesirable, but I just figured, hey, I'm going to be waiting forever. You know, I had heard from you and Dr. Peace on the show that it makes you wait. I figured I'm going
to
be waiting.
You were prepared to wait.
I was prepared. And here's the good thing about the league, though, is that because I would go on and check daily, you know, my status, and I would, like, you know, make alterations per their suggestions. Like, they're really good with the suggestions. Hey, you know, you may think about including this in your profile. Like, we've looked at your profile pictures. You don't have enough where you're smiling, or try to use profile pictures that have better lighting. Just all types of little tips. So I was always going on saying, okay, well, I'll try that, doing this. And it was like, you're almost there. You're still on the waiting list. But they would send me updates and let me know. They send me updates like every week, like, hey, don't be discouraged. We're looking at your application. You know, we got you.
Good.
Sooner or later, you're going to make it to the league. You're going to make it from the farm league to the big leagues. And that's how I looked at it. And I would check in and just see where I was at. And I've actually talking to people where it's taken them more than 2 months to get accepted.
Oh, it took me a year. So.
Oh, snap.
You did well.
Oh, snap. Yeah, because I was in like a month and a half later. They were like, congratulations. And what they actually told me is that my participation, my constant checking, because for them, they're like, how serious are you?
Right.
You know, if you're just going to like sign up and just wait for us to hit you, well, then we can wait. But if you're checking, like I was checking every other day. I wasn't just checking weekly. I was checking like, hey, where am I at? And then I was going in, let me rewrite this. It also gave me time again, to as I was about to say, to rewrite my profile, my introduction, to really think about if this is my first impression, if this is my elevator pitch, how tight is this elevator pitch right now? And I'm like, this is not really summing me up. And that's what the league helped me do. It helped me summarize who I was into like 2-3 sentences.
I see.
And for me, that was very refreshing because it helped cut back a lot of the superfluous stuff that I would always put into other websites.
So that was going to be my next question to you. So once you got through the entire process, what were the, I don't want to say candidates, because that's a little like politically incorrect, but like what were the people like on the other side?
As far as the suggested potential, and I don't even want to call them mates, but just people that I thought I would have some connectivity with, looking at their profiles, I saw how the league goes about connecting you with like-minded people or people who have similar interests. Because I could look in like educational background and interests and current careers, and you can see like, wow, there's commonalities here. Like, okay, you know, I may not dig what they do, but look at what they're into, or vice versa. So for me, and here's the thing about the league isn't just like, okay, you're in the league and here's like 50-11 people right that you can choose from. It's every day you get 3 possible choices. Now, here's what's really crazy. Okay, here's the part that blows my mind.
Uh-huh.
If, say, on Monday, there's candidates A, B, and C, and I say choose candidate A, but X out candidate B and C. If by Thursday I haven't really connected with, they'll bring back somebody. They'll be like, just in case you forgot about candidate B and C, here they are again.
I love it.
And it's
it.
Like, let me see.
I love that, though, boom. Because we're so used to the swipe culture where you swipe, 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 so you're not really paying attention to the person. So it gives you another yes. time to actually reevaluate their profile.
Yeah. And in between this, sometimes people update their profile.
Right.
So
I
they'll
love
update
that.
And add more information, all types of things. And I can say that I have had a couple of turns at bat in the
okay,
league.
Okay, okay. Curious.
And,
tell me more.
I'll say with, say, the first young lady that I've really connected with on the league, I think that there are a lot of similarities in what we like. I like a lot of her hobbies and interests and things like that. And that's someone that I've had an opportunity to go out with and meet. And, you know, and I like the way the way the league sets it up is it's not a pressurized, you're feeling like if I meet up with this person, like we got to get married. And no, it's like the league is setting it up where it's like everything seems really platonic.
Okay.
It really, really does. It seem, and when the way that you go about connecting is not the same pressures as that I felt on, say, Match, where it's like I'm here specifically to date and possibly get married, or Plenty of Fish, where it's just it's a whole stomping ground.
It's Plenty of Fish.
Yeah. So this one is more of a, we are trying to connect you with like-minded individuals. If there is a love connection there, cool. Which also takes me into the world of all of the league groups, where there are actually groups of like-minded people where there's like a league movie buffs. There's also a group of just parents where we were talking, you know, New Year's Eve, like, hey, so what are your children's ages and where are you going to stuff them for New Year's Eve?
Nice
kind of just organic kind of manner. And I think that that's different for me. And that's something that's kept me on the league versus other sites where I'm like, I've been quick to delete my membership. Like after that trial, I'm like, delete, cancel, I'm out. Because I felt like I either see women who are like, don't send me any dick pics, or I see women who are like, okay, if you are not about X, Y, and Z and blah,
right,
blah, blah. And I'm
right,
like,
right.
I get all these anger in the beginning. I'm like, yo, I see why you're single. You're a little angry going into this. Like, how are you approaching this opportunity to possibly meet someone and date? I look for people with positivity.
Very nice. So would you recommend to the professional person who's out there now dating or who has been dating in the past and try some things, do you think this is the step that they should go, the direction they should go?
Without a doubt. Especially, I'll say for young and old professionals. I think, you know, anyone over the age of 40, this really helps you root out, you know, the Rudy Poots. It really, really does. It's like you're dealing with people whose careers are verified, who anything they send you profile-wise has been verified. You know, I don't know if the league has got access to all your social media and everything and how they're checking to make sure you are who you say you are. But, you know, I am who I say I am, and I've grown weary and leery of meeting people as I have on other dating apps where they are nowhere near the person that I even imagine, even personality wise, where I meet someone, I'm like, how did you create the profile that you did? And I meet you and you like, so what, where are them scrimps at? Your profile said nothing about your love of scrimps. Okay. For me, that's tough. That's tough. I don't want a scrimp lover. You know what I'm saying? I would like someone who likes shrimp. There's a difference. Okay. The league will help you find those who like shrimp. I don't like shrimp. I'm just saying, just, you know.
That is crazy. Well, thank you so much for stopping by. I'm sure this will give our audience a lot of gems for those who are currently out there dating on the market. My first company, 7AM, was launched in 2014, and it was a crazy ride. I literally spent 10 plus years as a commercial music video director, and that whole lifestyle was just insane, from going to shoots and understanding that everything had to be perfect every single time. The lighting had to be perfect. Artists had to look perfect all the time. And that mentality for me just became very, very draining. And I always felt like I was hustling and hustling and hustling. And so when I moved to Silicon Valley with this first company that I wanted to get off the ground, I was just very determined and focused on how to make this work. And I got into that same kind of process again of making it perfect and it having to look perfect and feel perfect and all of these things. And to be honest, that isn't what it was about. Nobody cared if I had the perfect product or the perfect app or the perfect platform, or it looked beautiful, it was stunning and sparkly and all of these things. They really just cared that it got them results. And so after several years, it wasn't getting results. It literally got to the point where I was getting sales, but I wasn't focused on sales. I was focused on the creative and making it feel amazing. And the sales weren't coming in the door. So eventually we had to close the doors. I became obsessed with trying to figure out how to get sales. What was the quickest line from getting somebody from point A to point B so that they were getting results? And I studied tons of entrepreneurs, Tim Ferriss, Gary Vee. I became obsessed with trying to figure out how these entrepreneurs were creating successful companies. And after a while, I got the answers. It was literally just making sure that the customers got results. That was it. You wanted to delight the customer and you wanted to get the customer results. The end. So I built out Commas because I wanted to give you guys an opportunity to get those same results for your customers. I wanted you to get from point A to point B in the fastest and most efficient way possible. So I built this company to help you guys. We cover everything from product to marketing to publicity and fundraising, but more importantly, we cover sales. So if you guys are interested in getting your companies off the ground and making sure your entrepreneurial journey is streamlined and is much more efficient than mine was,
then log on to commastheseries.com or hit us up on our socials at commastheseries. Until next week, it's your girl Sequoia, and I'm out.